Welcome, everyone, and thank you for joining us for today's IBM teleconference, Case Studies, Managing Software Costs. Today's teleconference will last approximately 60 minutes and will include a live question and answer session. In this teleconference, you'll learn how organizations have reduced unnecessary software costs and compliance risk using Tivoli licensed compliance managers. The speaker for today's teleconference is Mike Zelli, IBM Tivoli Enterprise Asset Management. At this time, I would like to hand it over to our speaker, Mike Zelli.
Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, wherever you might be. Welcome to this teleconference on Managing Software Cost Case Studies. I'm Michael Zelli, and I'm involved with asset management at IBM in the IT area, and I'm also a project manager for the software asset management track at Share, a user conference for mainframe customers. And one of the things that I've learned over the years is that managing software costs is a key objective or a key concern of many organizations. So if you go to chart two, what we've done is put together a presentation that will address these issues that we've learned over the years. And to do that, we're first going to talk about why organizations are interested in software asset management, kind of the key drivers for that. Then we're going to spend some time talking about the discipline of software asset management. And there's some unique things that software has attributes of for managing as from an asset point of view that really kind of drive a lot of the decisions that have been made over time and will affect how your organization can manage software assets. So we'll spend some time talking about that. Then we're going to get into really what organizations have been able to achieve by implementing an effective software asset management program. And we're going to be talking about some of our customers and what they've been able to do to help them control software costs and manage software as it makes sense for their organization. Then we're going to spend some time talking about how to build a software asset management program. There's a lot of things that can be learned, a lot of steps that can be made, and a lot of missteps that can be avoided. So we're going to spend some time talking about what those key steps are. And then finally, we're going to spend a bit of time talking about how IBM helps in this area. We have a number of set of tools and services that can help you move forward, and we'll talk to you about those. All right, now moving on to chart three. Why do you care about software asset management? Why are you listening to this teleconference? Why are organizations spending more of a focus in this area? And there are two really main key drivers of it. First is that you may be paying for software that you don't use, and that's a waste of organizational resources. It's a waste of effort on a number of people's perspectives, and it's something that can really help in today's climate of controlling costs as best as you can. The other issue, which is relatively unique to software, is that you may be out of compliance, and that can have some implications for your organization. First off, it's very easy to be out of compliance with your software agreements because of normal IT operations of making sure that organizations are getting the value out of the software they have. It's very easy to deploy software that are out of the scope of the licensing terms and conditions that your organization has agreed to. And by being out of compliance, there are a couple of consequences of that. First of all, it could cause service disruptions as you go through and be within compliance of the software license agreement. And also, it could cost you significant dollars that weren't planned as far as the annual budgeting process. And those significant dollars that must be paid then come out of the budgets of projects that your organization would like to do. So there's the issue of compliance, which applies to software asset management, that is a key driver of trying to make sure that kind of thing does not happen in your organization. And then the last bullet here is that organizations, publicly traded organizations and government agencies and various types of nonprofits even, are basically required to do a very good job of having financial control procedures in place. And from a software point of view, that means that you in essence have to have the good financial control procedures where you can map pretty clearly from the software contract all the way through the software invoice that comes in the back end of the process, all the way through in the middle of where things are deployed back to the contract. In other words, you have to make sure that what you've licensed or purchased is actually being used out in your organization and is within the agreements that you've agreed to. And if you don't do that, there are liabilities that occur to that. And it's most often reflected in that internal audit departments in various organizations will go in and find the control procedures, the financial control procedures are not adequate. And what that means is then that typically is that most organizations then have a year to get themselves in order as far as having effective financial control procedures. And if the annual audit coming through a year later finds that no progress has been made, that becomes much more serious of a management issue. So those are kind of like at a very high level of the key drivers of software asset management, controlling costs, basically not wasting funds, and making sure that you don't have unplanned expenses being out of compliance and unplanned service disruptions. Now let's move on to chart 4, talking about some of the real benefits of having a good software asset management program. We talked about the first one here on this chart about compliance risk reduction. Having a good software asset management program makes the ability to control the risk of compliance audits and being out of compliance to a minimum. And it makes life a lot easier when your audit departments come through and say, show us your financial control procedures, and you can demonstrate that through your processes and so on, then that makes that life and that concern much more of a less of a risk than it would be without a good software asset management program. The next major category, software cost management, there are all sorts of techniques that a good software asset management program does to help control costs. The first one, identification reduction of no or low-use software, is kind of what we call the low-hanging fruit. I mean, once you have a good understanding of who is using what software, and if you find that you've got software that you've contracted for and not being used, that's an obvious candidate to save some money and use that fund spent on that software on other software that makes more sense for your organization. Server consolidations. This is another example of a good software asset management program can make all the difference. It's been going on in the mainframe space for years about consolidating workloads onto larger and larger servers. That is occurring now at a much faster pace in the distributed server environment where virtualized servers on larger machines are taking the place of many, many, many smaller departmental servers that are spread throughout the organization. If you're not careful on that consolidation process, you could end up paying a lot more money for software that is based on the capacity of the server that it's deployed upon. And if you take a software that was previously deployed on a small server and then move it to a much larger server, if you're not careful about how your terms and conditions of your agreement, you can end up owing a lot more money. So a good software asset management program needs to be part of any thinking through and planning of server consolidations so that you don't have any of those gotchas that come down the road after you've done the consolidation and done the upgrade. The rest of these bullets in here kind of talk through some of the specific tactics that you can do with a good software asset management program. We'll go into that in a little bit more detail further on in this presentation, but they're all specific actions that can be taken once you have a good software asset management program in place. And these two categories of software asset management benefits really, in essence, create the third category, which is there's always another project that needs to be done. There's always something else that can be done to help your organization do a better job. And by controlling software costs, you, in essence, free up funds to do those projects that you would like to do that you wouldn't otherwise be able to do. So that's a key value of having a good software asset management program. All right, well, let's move on to the next chart, chart 5. And spend a little bit of a time talking about the discipline of software asset management. The first thing that we need to come to grips with, and it took me a few years of being in this business before I really understood what this really meant, and that is that software is intellectual property. And as intellectual property, it's different than what we are used to most often for accounting organizations and us as consumers and so on. We usually buy tangible assets, things that we can touch and feel and hold, and we basically use those tangible assets as we choose. And if you can use it as an example to kind of clarify the differences, you think about the chair that you're probably sitting on right now. That chair is a hard asset, and if you're in your company, you could possibly even have an asset tag attached to it that then gets flowed into the accounting systems in your organization and tracked accordingly and purchased and managed and maintained and disposed of in a relatively organized manner once it has that asset tag. Well, if it was intellectual property, if you step back a minute and think about that chair you're sitting on, if it's intellectual property, it's different in that for intellectual property, the legal definition of how you can use that intellectual property is defined in the license agreement that you have to use that intellectual property. Now, hardware assets are typically transferred, ownership is transferred over to the purchaser, and they can use that hard asset or tangible asset any way they choose. But for intellectual property, the use rights are assumed to be owned by the owner of that intellectual property and then licensed to the users of that property, and that licensing is determined by the terms and the conditions of that agreement. Now, moving back to our chair example, if a chair is intellectual property, you would probably have a license agreement that says something to the effect of that you can sit down in that chair and do various activities, including work and conversations and so on, during the course of the business day. And that would be fine. But if you somehow realize at some point during the day that you need to stand on that chair to change a light bulb or get a file that's really high up in the room, and if you did not actually license it to be able to stand on, you would, in quotes, be out of compliance with that intellectual property agreement that you had with the vendor. Now, that's kind of an extreme example, but if you just get back to thinking about the definition of which is typically in license agreements, like what is a user? And a user, if you can think of it like a database application, a user could be 100 users for an internal use in a company, and that would be fine, but if it was a software catalog that was used in this database and you made that available to your customers on the Internet, then the definition of a user could be anybody who has access to the Internet. So the reason I bring that example up is that it's very important to really understand your license entitlements, because if you don't really know what those mean and what they, you know, those definitions, that means that it gives you another example of how you could be out of compliance with that intellectual property and thereby be exposed to license compliance fees and upgrade fees, et cetera. I'm using extreme examples also from the point of view just to give you the sense that managing software, it's most important to try to, in essence, put a virtual asset tag on software, and that really means combining three sets of key information to create a virtual asset tag, and that is the inventory of what you have deployed out there, the usage of that inventory, the usage of that software, and then linking that to the license entitlements that you have for that software. Once you have those three sets of information brought together, you in essence have that virtual asset tag that then you can apply to your normal accounting systems to track and manage accordingly. Now, to the next section of this chart really talks about how ITIL has defined software asset management. And what I've done here is bold a section of this definition to highlight some of the key points of what I was just talking about, in that doing software asset management effectively is bringing together the people, the software asset managers, system administrators, purchasers, et cetera, in a processes and with the technology to allow software licenses and usage to be systematically tracked, evaluated, and managed. And that brings back to my point of really creating a virtual software asset tag, which means understanding what is out there, how it's being used, and linking that to license entitlements so that you can manage the software, which is intellectual property. The reason I'm spending some time on this is it really has a big impact on what you think and how you can effectively manage software assets in your organization. Now let's move on to chart 6. If you've gone to a Gartner conference on IT asset management, they do an excellent job of really providing the basic foundation information to manage software asset appropriately. And in a presentations that you will see at these conferences, there will be some form of the graphic on the left, which talks about how you really need to bring three key elements together in order to manage software assets effectively. And that's the inventory and usage of that software, as I just described, linking that information to contracts or the license entitlements that I was talking about. And then, of course, you also need to bring in the financial implications of that. How much does the software cost relative to the inventory and the license entitlements and so on. Having those three sets of information linked together is, in essence, the foundation information that you need to do effective software asset management. To me, and from what I've learned from being in this business for quite a few years, this is an extremely important point and a key information to have in order to do a good software asset management program. Now, what we've also learned, though, is that from a practical point of view, Gartner's point is absolutely right as far as the information is needed. But in order to be an effective software asset management program, there are other elements involved. First, on the lower left, is organizational buy-in. Because software asset management cuts across many departments, you need system administrators on one side to procurement people, to legal departments, et cetera, on the other side. You need organizational buy-in for each one of those departments in order to do their portion of the activities that are needed to do an effective software asset management program, which brings to the point that you need to have the right processes in place. You need to know when each one of those individuals in the various departments need to do a specific activity that helps move the overall process of software asset management processes properly. So having the right processes and connected at the right time is very important. And then finally, you need to have the right tools in place to help bring that information together to those individuals at the right time in the process in order to be effective. So this is kind of a high-level graphical view of kind of talking through the information that's needed and then the organizational processes and buy-in that's needed in order to be really successful. Now, moving on to Chart 7, not all organizations are as successful as they'd like to be in software asset management. And there are kind of some common themes that we found over the years that tend to highlight why organizations are less successful than some of their peers. And just kind of emphasize the point that I was just talking about, having the appropriate executive level buy-in is extremely helpful in making this happen. If there's no executive buy-in at the proper level, it's hard to bring the various organizations together to achieve goals. Giving an individual or a department responsibility without the authority to execute on software asset management tasks that are needed results in no results or limited success compared to what other organizations are able to do. And, of course, you need to have a good same process that includes multiple departments. There's also, in order to get buy-in and get people involved, you really need to be able to justify and explain the value of software asset management, the savings that are achieved both short-term and long-term, and so on. The next bullet really kind of talks through some of the conflicts that can arise between various groups and the need to be able to manage that and to bring it together. So all these kinds of things are kind of the organizational issues that need to be addressed in order to have a successful software asset management program. Moving on to Chart 8 is a graphical way of looking at software asset management maturity levels. And one of the interesting things at some of these Gartner conferences is that they will present this concept of maturity levels in software asset management ranging from complete chaos at a level one all the way up to the more sophisticated organizations that have their processes well established and very proactive and beyond. And the polling questions at these seminars will ask, where do you rate yourself in your organization? And the vast majority of the audience will rate themselves as either a level two or a level three. And at times, when you know, add more dimensions to it, it will depend upon which platform you're talking about, and also it will vary at various situations between sometimes you fall all the way down to a level one and then be as sophisticated as up to a level four. It all varies by organization and also inside each organization depending upon platform and depending upon the vendors you're talking about and so on. But the overall point, and one of the things that I found quite interesting, is that as a group, as an overall organization and capabilities, software asset management is relatively young as a business discipline, and that most organizations are at the level two and moving towards the level three. And if you can think back into the mainframe space, think about capacity management and managing how sophisticated that is as a discipline, something that's been worked on aggressively and thought through carefully for years and years, that's quite a mature profession. Software asset management is not that way. We are getting more mature as time moves on, but we still have a long way to go to be effective. Now, let's move on to chart 9 to help organize, you know, how to achieve benefits in software asset management. And what this chart does is bring back the elements that we talked about earlier, which is to really understand the inventory that you have out there, the software inventory, understand the usage patterns or the usage activity of that software, and then the license entitlements or contract information that you have for that software. And what this chart does is help kind of understand what you need to do at various states, depending upon which element you have. Now, so getting into a little bit more detail, let's look in the upper left-hand side, where I have a piece of software deployed, I have a software product deployed, and I can see that I have users that are using it, and that's good, but I can't find a contract for it. I can't find a license entitlement for it. It doesn't necessarily mean that your organization does not have a license for it. It could mean that you just can't find that contract. That can particularly happen in large, diverse organizations with multiple purchasing abilities, the resulting meaning that one organization may have actually licensed the product, but another department may not know about it. They're basically a task for the software asset management is to go out and verify license compliance and then take some action that's needed to correct that. That can be either purchase licenses if they aren't able to find the license contract, or they can move that software over to another server or another section of the organization where we would be in compliance and still provide that service or that software to the customer. There are a number of actions that have been taken, but clearly without being able to have that license and tie it to that specific installation and use of it, you would be, in essence, out of compliance if you had an audit occur. All right, now let's go down to the lower left. I don't have it installed. I don't use it, but I'm contracted for it. Now, this immediately kind of pops into the head of saying, well, gee, if I don't have it deployed and I'm not using it, that's a no-brainer. I should just cancel maintenance or talk to the vendor and ask about redeploying my fees for that software for another software product that makes more sense for my organization. That in most cases would be correct, but it's also possible that a product was purchased and was meant to be deployed and used and has for some reason got hung up in the process and is not deployed the way you would like it to be in your organization. So there are a couple of options you need to pursue and investigate as a software asset manager to really figure out how to take advantage of this situation. Now, if you look on the far right, this is a case where I have it installed, but no one's using it, but I'm contracted for it. This is a different flavor of what's going on out there than what we just talked about, and it could very easily be something that where you can eliminate unnecessary licenses, or it's a training issue, or it's a deployment issue, something of that sort. But again, requires investigation, and it's an opportunity for your organization to either optimally use software that you have purchased or reduce your license fees and deploy your expenditures elsewhere. And then finally, in the upper right-hand quadrant, everything appears to be green. I have it deployed, I'm using it, and I'm contracted for it. But there are a number of things that can be done for this. You certainly should be doing invoice validation that when you receive it, tie it back to the license terms and conditions and to the fees that you've agreed to make sure that's proper. But there's also some other things you can do. You can talk about using that more effectively in other parts of the organization. You can use it for talking through with possibly competitive replacements. A lot of times organizations have similar products that do similar functions. Can quite often happen through various mergers and acquisitions, and there could be advantages achieved by consolidating a more common software product that's used across the organization. That is something that can be done, but it must be done very carefully. At one of our software asset management sessions at the SHARE conference, we had an excellent presentation given by a user about how they went through the process of obtaining organizational consensus on consolidating on a single product that made sense for their organization. The whole gist of the presentation was the careful process that was used to bring all the stakeholders together to come to a common agreement to decide which software product that they would like to standardize on. And it was quite interesting. Anyway, let's move on to chart 10 to give some specific examples of these scenarios. And these are some of IBM customers that have over the years been able to achieve some software asset management benefits. Now, with on the first one for the global oil company, what is interesting is this, to me, is the second example where we talk about a modeling product that they had, where they found that it was, in essence, a product that was used by one department in their organization. And they basically went back to that department and said that, you know, you're the only department that uses the particular software. We're going to charge you directly for use of this software product. And that department then immediately decided that they could find an alternative way to use this modeling product. I've heard similar stories from other customers that did similar things or went back to the vendors and say, gee, you know, this particular product really is only being used by one department and makes much more sense for us to move to an alternative product, but we would like to use it. And the vendor was able to reduce their fees, and thereby they kept proceeding with that old product, and they continued to use it. Chart 11 is an example of a customer that set up a repository of their contracts. And so they were able to deal with the issues of a large organization that had multiple contracts, basically in file cabinets, around the organization. And what they did is a concerted effort to organize all those contracts in one place and to abstract out of those contracts the key information, the license entitlement information, meaning usually there's a metric involved with a license entitlement, whether it's users or capacity of the servers that things are deployed on, the number of installations on C drives for a lot of PC-based software. Those types of license entitlement information, that's really one of those key elements that we talked about earlier in the discussion. And that's what they did. They made a major effort of consolidating, putting that information together, and it helped them address this license compliance issue, and it helped them avoid, basically, a big part of it was over-purchasing, because they found that they over-purchased all sorts of places, and in essence were able to save themselves significant amounts of money just by consolidating and organizing all their contracts and their license entitlements. Now let's move on to chart 12. This is an example of organizations that were able to start doing some things that made a lot of sense to make themselves more efficient, particularly in the world of what I talked about earlier briefly, was consolidating from a lot of smaller servers onto a larger servers. Nowadays, a lot of vendors will offer sub-capacity or virtualized capacity license agreements for the software that is licensed on the capacity of the server that it's deployed upon. You can take advantage of those types of agreements by negotiating that logical partition or virtualized portion of the server, thereby saving yourselves a lot of money. And here are some examples of being able to do that here. That's one example of the kind of more sophisticated type of software asset management that organizations are able to do. All right, now let's spend some time talking about how to build a software asset management program. First of all, you really need to set up the groundwork. On chart 13 here, we're going to be talking about really putting together an information foundation. And, you know, can't emphasize more the value of understanding your inventory, the usage patterns of that software that's deployed, and linking that information to license entitlements. Once you have those three sets of information linked together, then you can take action. And you know, without that information organized and put together in an appropriate way, you really don't have a foundation in order to do a software asset management program. Now, that doesn't mean that that foundation has to be 100% complete and completely linked and everything all done appropriately. And that really gets onto the phase two of the program, where it is really need to prioritize. What we recommend is that you look for contract renewals that are coming up and prioritize your work accordingly, particularly with those vendors that represent significant dollars of your overall software budget. And that ties back to the information foundation. What you would need to do is focus on building that information foundation on those vendors that make the most impact on your environment. A part of that is to prioritize appropriately and build that foundation, and then start working, doing your tasks and working your tasks according to the size of the budget that's being deployed to that particular vendor, and then also the renewal schedules that make sense for that vendor. Then moving on to the next chart, chart 14, the next phase that you can look at is to go for the low-hanging fruit that I mentioned before. Once you understand the usage patterns of the software that you've contracted for and have deployed, that's an easy way of start finding things that are shelfware or things that are low usage or used by an individual department or whatever. Those are products that give opportunity to save yourself some money and use that money to deploy other software that makes more sense to your organization. The next phase is to start looking and thinking about eliminate unnecessary products. And I talked about that the presentation a moment ago that a user gave at the Software Asset Management track at Share. There are a lot of duplicate product opportunities. There are competitive opportunities. There are competitive replacement opportunities and so on that you can use as you become more sophisticated in your program. On chart 15 is an extension of the examples of duplicate products in that you might likely have multiple versions of products running in your organization. This can include homegrown applications plus, of course, vendor products. But having multiple versions actually deployed in your organization results in higher support costs, higher maintenance costs, and things like that. And by understanding your usage patterns by version, you can help identify those that are on the old version and help migrate them up to the most current version of a particular product. That's quite useful as another element of controlling software costs. And then finally, moving on to the next chart, chart 16, you know, long-term savings. There are all sorts of things that can be done to help control costs over the long run. And this particular chart, or this example we have in this chart, is talking about really setting up a virtual warehouse of software. There's a lot of opportunity to manage your software licensing to make sure that you harvest licenses as you retire hardware and not lose the capabilities that you actually have when you actually purchase that hardware and initially deployed software. So by setting up a virtual warehouse that makes sense for the licenses, terms, and conditions that you have for particular software products, can also save yourselves a lot of money. Typically, organizations tend to overbuy in order to make sure that they're within compliance, and because it's relatively easy from an administrative point of view to do that. But from a cost point of view, it can have a significant impact, and if you have a sophisticated software asset management program, you can take advantage of that cost control and be able to save your organization some money. All right. Now, on chart 17, we're getting into how IBM helps in this area. And what IBM offers is a set of products that brings together the key sets of information that we've been talking about throughout this discussion. And that is the software inventory of what's deployed, the software use of how software is used that is deployed. And we bring two elements of that perspective of software use. Not only do we help you understand the departments and individuals that use software, but we also provide information that makes sense from a license metric point of view, because software is not necessarily licensed based on the number of times a particular user is using a product. They can be based on the capacity the software is deployed on. It can be based on all sorts of things. So we bring you the two elements of use that are relevant for software asset management. And then finally, we provide the ability to link that information to license entitlements, which gets you to really what you need to be able to do is make sense for value to the organization of software asset management, which is really to help you determine where you are over-licensed, which is a savings opportunity, or where you're under-licensed, and that's a compliance risk that you can proactively manage to take to correct that situation prior to a vendor audit or an internal audit or some sort of an external audit. That's one of the key elements that we bring all that information together. And the two products that we have that do that are Tivoli License Compliance Manager and IBM Tivoli License Compliance Manager for ZOS. Between those two products, we cover all the significant platforms that organizations have to manage their business. Conceptually, they do exactly the same thing of bringing this sets of information together, but they are unique given the unique platforms that they do their work on. And then finally, we link the information from these products to Tivoli Asset Management for IT, you can keep all your contract and financial information about these software products that you have. And then also, it can help you manage, Tivoli Asset Management for IT will help you manage the life cycle and the workflow for software asset management. As we talked about earlier in this discussion, there's a whole lot of importance that needs to be focused on doing an effective software asset management process. And Tivoli Asset Management for IT helps you manage that process, which I'll discuss in more detail in a few moments. If you move on to chart 18, you will see a graphical example of what the license compliance managers will provide. This eye chart here really points out the red bars, kind of point out where you in essence have software that's deployed and used that exceeds the license entitlements that you have set up is what you're licensed for. And this is a quick graphical way for you to be able to identify where you're out of compliance and thereby can take some action to figure out what's going on which resulted in that compliance report. Now, moving on to chart 19, as I mentioned just a moment ago, Tivoli Asset Management for IT helps you manage the process of software asset management. And if you think about the full life cycle of a piece of software, you have a planning phase in your organization, you have an acquisition phase of that software, you have a deployment phase, and then you have a maintain phase, which most of the activity that we've been talking about today relates to understanding what's going on in your environment and maintaining it appropriately. And then you have a retirement phase where you retire that piece of software, and as we mentioned before, you may retire a piece of hardware, which gives you an opportunity to harvest some software licenses. There's a number of elements even with that phase. You know, there are distinct phases of managing a software product through its life cycle, and these bullets underneath each one of these phases represent activities that need to be done by individuals in your organization to accomplish an effective software asset management process. And the real power of what Tivoli Asset Management for IT offers is that its easily configurable screen enables you to configure screens that make sense for each individual to accomplish their task at the right time, because what it also has is an easily configurable workflow so that as you approve a product, then the workflow would then pass on to the individual that has the responsibility to actually acquire the product for the purchasing side. Then for the next phase of the cycle, as it comes onto the loading dock, the person who accepts that software and matches it against the purchase order, et cetera, that process can be defined as it goes throughout the full life cycle. There are many different ways to do a workflow. All organizations, even after one workflow has been set up, people will change, processes will change, and one of the additional great flexibility of what Asset Management for IT offers is that it can easily adjust and change as your organization changes, your processes change. So that helps with that process perspective of an effective software asset management program. So anyway, moving on to chart 20, what we do from an IBM perspective at a very high level is give you visibility as to what's going on in your software asset management environment. We bring to your attention in an organized way your software inventory, your use activity, and your license entitlements so that you can basically get the visibility as to what's really going on and create that virtual asset tag that I talked at the beginning of this teleconference. And then we give you the control and the automation through Tivoli Asset Management for IT in that we set up the organizational processes that can help you automate the process and give you the control that you need so that you have everything tightly managed so that when the auditors come to your organization and say, well, what kind of financial procedures do you have in controlling software assets, we provide the tools that you can use to help you demonstrate that you have accomplished that. So anyway, that kind of concludes this teleconference today. On the last chart, chart 21, are links to the software asset management products that we discussed today, and you can find more information about that. And also in the backup section, I provided some additional detail on software asset management maturity levels that you can look at and get a little bit better definition and think about how your organization fits. I hope you found this teleconference useful, and I would like to turn the call over to the operator so that we can have a question and answer period. Thank you.
Thank you, Mike. Now I would like to ask you to participate in a brief electronic survey. Right after the survey, we will have a live question and answer session with your presenter. Your feedback is important to us, and we do appreciate the time you take to answer these questions. To participate, simply press the star key, followed by the number that best corresponds to your choice. Please listen to all options before making your selection. Please evaluate your level of satisfaction with today's teleconference. If it was high, press star 1. If it was medium, press star 2. If it was low, press star 3. And we'll pause for just a moment. That was the level of technical information presented in this teleconference. If it was at the right level, press star 1. If it was not technical enough, press star 2. If it was more technical than I needed to hear, press star 3. Which platform do you focus your organization's software asset management resources? If it is mainframe, ZOS, press star 1. If it is distributed, press star 2. If it is both mainframe and distributed, press star 3. And once again, we'll pause for a moment. We hope you have enjoyed the teleconference today. Please let us know if you are interested in receiving additional information or follow-up regarding the products discussed today. If yes, press star 1. If no, press star 2. That concludes our survey. Thank you all for your participation. Now let's move to your questions. To ask your question, please press the star key followed by the digit 1 on your telephone at any time. At this time, I'll turn the conference over to our speaker while we wait for questions.
Thank you, everybody, for listening to this call. While we're waiting for questions, if you are listening to a recording of this teleconference, or would like to ask me a question directly, please send me an email. My email address is mzelle, Z-E-L-L-E, at us.ibm.com. That's mzelle at us.ibm.com. Thank you. Are there any questions?
And once again, that is star 1 if you have a question today. And we have no questions at this time, sir. I'll turn things back to you for closing comments.
Great. Well, I hope you enjoyed today's teleconference. There is all sorts of information in this area that can be shared among our colleagues and who we all work on trying to improve our capabilities in software asset management. And we at IBM are spending a lot of time and effort improving our product offerings to help in this area. And they also extend, of course, to the full Tivoli service management set of offerings that are based on the similar platform that the software asset management and the IT asset management software is available on. So anyway, thank you very much for your time, and have a great day.
And that does conclude today's conference. We appreciate your participation and wish you all a great day.